Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, Editor-in-Chief of the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with Managing Editor Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Matt, here we are. We're still here. We're keeping ourselves very busy, and we're busy here again. More podcasts. It's really fabulous. Who have we got joining us today?
Today we are going across to the Hudson Valley in New York State, and we're going to talk about art and accelerated resolution therapy with a wonderful young therapist, Alex Sugarman.
Fantastic. Now, she's been doing this work for a long while. Apparently, the family's is very involved in literally an art. I believe her husband's a sculptor.
Yeah.
So it's really good. What are some of the things she's sort of engaged in?
Yep. So she has worked with a Texas-based nonprofit called the Lone Survivor Foundation, and we'll have a little bit of a chat about that. And she's worked in general with people that are suffering PTSD and different traumas. And specifically using, as we will discover, art as the primary therapeutic technique.
Yeah, I think it's really great. We occasionally talk about art, but perhaps we should talk about it a lot more. So I'm really excited about this one. So I reckon we should head over to the fabulous open fields of the Hudson area and talk to Alex.
All right, let's go. Alex Sugarman, thank you so much for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hi, Alex. Richard here. Great to see you and hear you. Fantastic.
Now, Alex, you're coming from us in country in New York. Whereabouts are you?
So I'm in the Hudson Valley, man. It's about 2 hours north of New York City.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we had a little bit before we started recording, we had a bit of look at your backyard. You're in this beautiful country and environment.
It's a lovely space. Now, Alex, we've mentioned a few things about you and sort of given you a bit of a cardboard cutout introduction. Can you tell us a couple of things about yourself? What's exciting about your work? There's a few things we want to talk about. There's your artwork, this great accelerated resolution therapy. These things are coming. They're mysteries now. But what got you to where you are? What are some of the quirky, interesting things about you that have drawn you to all these interesting facets, let's see where we go from there.
Absolutely, yeah. So I was always really interested in art and story, and both of those things were exciting and thrilling to me, and I think really just always helped me to make sense of the world. And so when I pursued my graduate degree and I found art therapy, it had just brought together so many elements of what I found incredibly inspiring and important. It was an experiential outlook on psychotherapy. And that kind of kicked off a number of years where I was involved in exploration of experiential methods of therapy. And what I mean by that is using an actual facilitated experience with a mental health professional on it, you know, either art materials or over time courses, and helping people discover more about themselves through experience. And so I was sort of following a career path through creative arts therapy and working in a number of different settings. And in 2016, I got involved with an organization called the Lone Survivor Foundation. We met through a conference, and there were so many different modalities that had come together to treat really acute cases of PTSD in the military, military sexual trauma, combat trauma, families, couples. And they just brought together this beautiful menu of services that was creating incredible change. And when I learned about the organization, I said, art therapy would really add something beautiful here. You know, I'd love to come out. And so I interviewed and I shadowed and was invited to join the team for a number of years. And I discovered not only just a great deal about acute PTSD and combat trauma, but really about just emerging methods with incredibly talented clinicians. It was such an incredibly talented team of people that came together. And it was such a special thing to just have people from different disciplines and different modalities figuring out, you know, the most cutting edge treatment options. And I went through some complicated things in my life at that point, and some traumatic losses that shaped a lot of the work that I did in the coming years. But coming home from this therapeutic retreat setting, I ended up bringing a lot of that work into some trauma work in private practice, and just feeling so compelled by this evidence in front of me, really, that whether it was combat trauma or a military environment, that, you know, the nervous system is just this massive driving component of human experience. And there's just this universal experience, despite, you know, the different kind of possible threats that we're talking about, that the experience had a universal element that was really meaningful to witness. So,
yeah. I mean, as you know, you've been watching us a bit. I'm a great advocate of naturalism and naturalness, and that a lot of our therapies, the most effective ones are ones that we can actually see way back in our history and evidence there. And as you talk and in the brief contemplations that I've had about art therapy and things, I think right back to the experiences back in the caves with our what we call prehistoric human beings. But this thing that they did art therapy a lot. They would put the images, they would do pre-battle images to give them ritual. They would do rituals afterwards. But going back even further, this moment in our evolutionary history where somebody put the print of their hand up on a wall and somehow or another they were just lay on it because they were dirtier, but somehow that handprint emerged. They externalized themselves in a way that they'd never done before. So it's something that that's not just a new thing. This really taps into something really deep seated, I think. And looking at your stuff, this is what you're finding. You're opening up amazing things in people.
Absolutely. And I think what's interesting too, what's kind of consistent across your work, I'm sure as well, is that so much of our experience, our human experiences are happen in imagery, right? So whether it's a thought image in our mind or a process that we're externalizing or a memory, these are all images that are inside of us. And in so many of the modalities that I work with, externalizing that image or making sense, not always externalizing it, because I also, you know, I do some work with image, bringing up image kind of in the mind and not with the external process.
No, I know, that's right. I mean, although what it is it's separate. It's just a separate. It's a creation within and without. You're absolutely right. And this aspect that, I mean, in human beings, our occipital lobe, our visual cortex, has become our dominant. Expression. I mean, others have hearing and so on and so forth. And fascinatingly, people who've lost their sight still seem to have visualizations of different forms, which is quite extraordinary.
Yeah. Alex, I'm wondering if you could paint us a picture of what might typically happen in a session, let's just say with military personnel with PTSD, and what would you be typically doing with them?
Yeah, not the sort of people that you would immediately expect have been doing much artwork.
No, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, how do they segue in?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love working with an atypical population, actually. And I think what's funny about art is that it's also a vulnerable process, right? We sort of have to dig into our, really turn inward in a different way and connect in such an atypical way that the results are really incredible time and again, because we're accessing such different parts of our brain. And so with art therapy and with running groups within this therapeutic retreat setting, what would happen is we would bring together groups typically between 9 and 12 people. So depending on what I mentioned before, that these were military families or combat veterans or military sexual trauma survivors. And typically they would, the art became what I called at the time, sort of like an externalized conversation with self. And the theme would be different each time. But really what we focused on was not only the visual that was in front of each person, but taking time during the group to also just notice the process of engaging with the art materials, because so much of that metaphor is really relevant to each individual story. And so the product was significant and interesting and often became a transitional object away from these retreat settings or between sessions, and often does today in my private practice. But sort of, I think what's almost more compelling about it is that there are just so many different angles through which that metaphor comes up, that unconscious material comes up. And that's really what I love about it.
Yeah. Yes. Is there a little case study that, you know, you're okay in revealing to us, or perhaps a little amalgamation of some things, obviously always looking after the client's privacy? Is there a little just sort of example that you could, or even one you just amalgamate for us?
Yeah. I mean, I guess because I started to initially tell you a little bit about the veterans work, my head is just there. So while I'm not working with that organization anymore, it was foundational in my life. And so some of the stories come up from there. Absolutely. And what I can say, kind of, you know, we laughed a little bit about veterans being maybe an unusual population. And that was really fun for me, because initially I would really have to prepare clients to be open to using art materials and really create an environment where that could be sort of non-threatening and comfortable and people could engage readily. So I'm trying to think if there's a specific story that comes to mind. There were so many ways in which the group would come together, and we wouldn't necessarily, each person would be on such an individual journey, but the artwork would sort of take on a life of its own altogether in a really incredible way. So sometimes there would be a theme that would run through the group, that where you would look at 10 paintings all next to each other after day two of making artwork, and something would emerge that would surprise everyone, like a color that had kind of that ran through 10 different paintings, or an image of healing that had transformed. And so when I think of the stories of that time, I'm not, like, one case study doesn't come to mind with this modality, but more of the groups of how beautiful it was to see groups engage. And so they were recording so much growth and healing that was happening over a 5-day period. And then they had this incredible record of this captured in artwork. And so, you know, in so many different therapies, we come out of the work with an embodied experience, with a relationship that's built, but we don't always have a visual reminder in that way. And so having that was just incredible. And it's funny that the brain loves that, right? So when I think back to that time, I sort of have just this collection of images of just different inspiring days that were really moving and powerful work came through.
Sorry, it sounds like some of this was done, or maybe all of this was done, in a group setting. Is that right?
Right. So I was working in a therapeutic retreat setting. So that was a team that was traveling nationally at the time. And so they were based in Texas and New Mexico and Utah. And in my office today, what typically I am bringing in some different modalities and then using artwork much in the same way to sort of capture the process and have a client kind of externalize that experience and have this really transitional object essentially from group, from week to week, or when terminating.
Yeah, right. These artifacts, we talk about that a lot in theory and stuff. I don't know whether I'm too early or not, but I hear we're talking this therapy that creates resolutions, giving people, you know, externalized artifacts they consider. And I just go, wow, that probably accelerates the process. And then I go, oh, that's right, that's what you do. So is it a good time now just to segue into a discussion of this this process of accelerated resolution therapy? Is that
absolutely? And I'm really excited to be here today, because so many of the key ingredients are so much of what you've referenced in so many of your shows, and it gave me such a laugh when I forget if it was Matt or Richard who was talking about just the emergence of all these acronyms, right? There are so many acronyms in the field. Yeah. But the data that the two of you have collected with this pile now of acronyms, it's amazing. I mean, and there aren't, you know, just the way these conversations have come together in this way is great. So I'm excited to talk about another acronym today that has a lot of meaning.
Yes. So ART. So this acceleration of the resolution. Yes, ART. Actually, I'm a bit of a thicket because I just saw, oh yeah, ART. That's right. Very good. Don't worry about me. I'll catch up along the way. So can you give us a bit of an insight into the nature of the framework you use around the accelerated resolution therapy?
Sure. So I mentioned before it was founded in 2008 and the research began in 2010. And essentially, a woman named Lainey Rosenzweig, she had trained in EMDR and she was practicing this method. She was using eye movement and she sort of stumbled upon something by accident. She said, I've resolved a lot for my clients quite quickly. Like I've really found an answer here that's compelling. And she went back to the founders of EMDR who she was training with at the time. And they said, you know, this is really interesting, but it's not EMDR. Call it something different. And so she brought together memory reconsolidation, imagery, and eye movement, and used a lot of Gestalt techniques that referenced storytelling at large and metaphor and visualization, and brought this together to help really with one of two things: either a very explicit scene in someone's life that they've survived that brings up acute or extreme physical sensations and distressing imagery, or metaphor in general that to capture the presenting problem, essentially. And what she did was really, she built this into protocol that typically takes place over an hour-long session. And since the research has come out, there's been just consistent evidence that it can reduce PCL scores by 75% in an average of 4 sessions.
Wow. Pretty cool. Good.
Yeah.
It's great to get those sorts of numbers. So you have a sense of framework, a stable framework that you're working on. But really when I'm listening, I'm hearing again this integration of what became siloed or differentiated elements, and I'm always a great one for, you know, taking the car apart and advancing things, but put them back together again is a really good idea. How do we incorporate these activities of the EMDR and the metaphor, and is it improvisational or is there actually a protocol? What's sort of the framework?
Yeah, so there's a very specific framework. So there's a series of steps in order, essentially, and involving exposure to a traumatic experience. And it involves sort of bringing up that imagery. The client brings up an event from and sort of plays it from beginning to end, and then works to change the imagery. So what makes it particularly compelling is that the tagline is really perfect. It says, keep the knowledge, lose the pain. There's an awareness of the story, but the physical sensation is completely clear and the images actually change. So people recall a memory with different imagery. They have an awareness, again, of what has happened and what has brought them to present day, but their brain produces that image and their brain reorganizes it. And so what I love about it and the way that I work really is just it's solution focused, it's client-centered, meaning that there are suggestions and each person gets to sort of create this story and allow it to unfold in any way that they would like. And that piece of it just proves effective again and again.
Yeah, this reframing of the narrative, it all goes into what Joseph Ledoux and Richard Brown are talking about in the nature of the way that our higher order representations, you know, my stuff, I said the orientation, you shift the orientation, you know, those wonderful things that you used to have the where they would be a drawing, but then you'd turn it round and it'd be something completely different. Mm-hmm. This is something that human beings again like, that we love that surprise of, oh, that's different. I mean, that novelty, it's interesting.
Yeah. So this changing the story, is it a reframe or a complete reconstruction of the story, whether it's image or narrative?
So that's really up to the client.
Okay.
Engaging in a session, you know, they have the option to change the story in any way that they would like. That's really the prompt. Mm-hmm. What the piece of it that's quite compelling, again, is that they can process out physical sensation using eye movement. And so we scale that within the session as well. And so it's really the change in the client from the beginning of the 60 minutes to the end is just, and I say 60 minutes, it, you know, typically varies a bit within that window, but it's a very big shift that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that lovely frame of time. Yeah. I can see that. I mean, I'm imagining after the 60 minutes, there's a little bit of time where they then can contemplate, but of course, very often they've got an artifact that they can visualize or engage with, which is so they can continue it on for as long as they like, I imagine, afterwards. Yeah, privately.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that this actually sort of, it moves the imagery out of the amygdala, so the it becomes less less charged, right? So it's, and I can even reference you know, my own experiences, because as clinicians, we actually participate in the trainings. And so, you know, I have a memory, an unpleasant memory in a hospital, and my brain actually didn't want to change that image too much. It brought some beauty into a hospital setting. But when I recall, you know, it has just a much different feeling than a traumatic image, because of the ways that it was shifted in my mind and the ways in which I was able to process out that physical charge that comes along with it.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it sounds simple, but no, it's not. That's right. It's the impacts of it. And I think this is something that people don't appreciate as, and we're still yet to try and appreciate it. I'm working on some new work myself, and I was looking at the program, the how to do it, the steps of doing it, and I'm thinking, oh, that's ridiculously simple. But the thing is, people don't do it. This is what you're discovering, that you give them this opportunity. It's the, what do we say? You know, we need the opportunity and the circumstances. And this is what you offer them.
Yeah, simple steps, but in the process, you know, because as we are always saying, you know, to a terribly, you know, complex systems. So in the process and the product, as you were saying earlier, Alex, is not so simple, is it?
Right. I would say it's interesting because Richard was the process, and often there's a process that we offer to clients that they can engage in outside of our sessions, and ideally that there's sort of this practice that happens. And so this is, accelerated resolution therapy is such a fascinating tool to really have in your toolbox, because that's really not required. Like, going back to what Richard was asking, you know, with sort of the imagery, it's sort of the issue kind of then gets resolved. And so it's been interesting, quite interesting with complex trauma, because clients will come in with a presenting problem and it's causing acute distress. And then, you know, in longer term therapy, we're really peeling back those layers in different ways. And typically there, you know, there's more work to do when you're working with complex trauma. This tool in particular really just, yeah, offers a framework that changes the way, certainly the way that I've practiced and thought about psychotherapy.
Now, how do we can we learn this? Is this something that is available? I mean, there's books, or what's the way in which therapists who find this a really interesting process can get involved?
Yeah, so there are two organizations. I mean, there's a website called ART Works Now, and that describes a lot and offers some of the recent press and research around it. And there's a second nonprofit that was developed called the Rosenzweig Center for Rapid Recovery. that has worked to actually subsidize these trainings, and a completely actually have a note about it. There's just this, it's an independently funded organization because a philanthropist actually, he learned about the training and was just so blown away by the results he was seeing. And he sort of independently funded this organization that has subsidized some trainings across the country. And so it's growing, but really why I love having conversations like these is it's between the four walls of my office, so many things happen and so much shifts, and it's incredible how it's consolidated so many different effective pieces, and all of those pieces are pieces that you've spoken about so many times on your show, so it's exciting to talk about them today.
Yeah, and how has the understanding of memory reconsolidation informed you and this practice?
So I believe just, again, many of the same themes are present here where the memory is revisited. And what we know, right, is that it's not, that it's malleable and that over time it does shift. The eye movements add this just a very different component because they just completely shift the recall. So again, when they leave, there is that I do ask clients not to wait to sort of let the work set in after the session, because that window is open for a period of 6 hours, we know, right? But what happens is those images change, and they change based on in any way that the client has made that shift. And sort of from that point forward, what they actually recall with an image is different. And I haven't heard of any other modalities that do that in the same way.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's really good. And also what you talked about, we talked a bit about, wartime PTSD, which is just a very difficult thing, and particularly because there's large numbers of military people in the States. But, of course, what also caught my ear, which is very important, is things like sexual trauma. And I would imagine also, and another thing which is very important to us in our science of psychotherapy family here is domestic violence and those sorts of areas. Are these people having great shifts and changes as well?
Absolutely. I think, you know, especially with that kind of, I mean, with these really acute experiences of violence, what often lingers for many, many years is the picture, right? And so there's an image of a spouse during an assault, and there are, what amazes me typically about it as well is that they're really, what we know is that trauma is nonlinear, right? So people come in with images that are 50 years old or images that are 5 months old or things that they've carried in just lucidity for so long. And so that really, again, comes up frequently. And it's been interesting working with people who are in threatening situations, because we can use this tool to help empower them really to let go of some of these images that kind of keep them stuck in the same story and really reimagine themselves in imagery as well. So it captures both the resolution in survival, and what I think often we need is to really internalize what the future could look like for us and what this rebuilding can look like. And so that's another reason why I really love talking about these visual components.
Yeah, we talk about getting stuck, don't we, Matt? And the many ways in which we can unstuck ourselves, because that's the big issue of then, and things like, you know, domestic violence, being unable to find what is in with you that enables you to move forward. So that's wonderful. You're working with people during the process and enabling them as well. This is really cool. I want to have a look at all this. This is great.
Absolutely. Well, we're getting to the close of the show, Alex. Is there anything that we've sort of missed in talking about ART and other things that you're doing that you would like to mention before we close?
Just to harken back to Richard just referencing naturalism and art being just, creative arts being such a natural piece of who we are, I'm certainly working pretty hard these days to lean into and make space for creativity. And I think we're going to find our way through and out of this pandemic with art. I think it's going to lead the way. I think it will light the way for us.
Yeah. Yes, artists are doing so much. I mean, the people who usually perform to packed auditoriums have been the ones who've given their services and their time. I mean, goodness gracious me, the Rolling Stones, they don't need a dollar, but they were real happy to get up there and sing a few songs and I think the effects of that's just music, let alone the things of pictorial art and sculpture and these artifacts. Yeah, it's I love that idea, Matt. We need to be artistic even in our science.
Absolutely. It is an art and a science, isn't it? Well, Alex Sugarman, thank you so much for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's been wonderful to catch up with you. We will be sure to point everybody in your direction, your website and resources, and we'd love to learn more.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I started to make, speaking of art, I just started to put some art onto the internet on an Instagram page, and so I'm trying out sort of making some artwork and playing around with some concepts that I have an Instagram handle now. It's called Trauma Remedy.
Go, don't find out what the politicians are doing. Find out what the art is doing.
Absolutely.
Oh, right?
All right. Alex, thank you so much. And we'll just say bye for now. And hopefully we catch up with you again before too long.
Okay.
This was fantastic. Thank you so much for all you do.
Okay. Thanks, Alex. Bye-bye.
That was great, Matt. I was really pleased to just hear her talking about, and as you know, domestic violence are important with Jess's book and everything, my Jess's book. But that you can use this process not only in recovering past issues, but you can also use it when you're in the grip of present issues to shift your frame, to shift that mindset that makes it hard to get out of things. So. Really interesting. Yeah. I look forward to looking it up.
Yeah. It was a good reminder for me. You know, I have to admit, I haven't been using art in my therapy practice. In the past, I've used images and that sort of thing. And being an artist myself, I really should look into this more again.
Yeah, get some of those steps. I mean, I've had a number of people where we've spontaneously gone into it because that's mm-hmm. their best attribute. But I've sometimes felt as though I'm behind the ball and not quite knowing how to contribute as well. So this is something that hopefully will improve, and engage in this deliberate practice of learning, learning more skills. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Well, as always, the links will be in the show notes. So just click through to the landing page for the podcast and you'll find the links in. And we can all discover more together with this accelerated resolution therapy.
Brilliant. Well, that's it for now.
Been fun, as always. Thank you, everybody, for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.